So we have a few minutes until we officially start, but I just kind of wanted to get a sense of who's here, what you're looking to get from the panel, because that can help us some of the questions that we're going to go over. How many of you work on the brand side? Okay. And of that, major brands, big brands? Great. Medium to small, smaller medium brands? Excellent. Agency side? Okay. Any small independent companies, small businesses? A few. Great. And let's see what else. How many of you are from Austin? Awesome. How many of you have been to this church before? You were coming to church on as part of South By, so this is great. Getting my worship time in early this week. And let's see what else. How many of you, actually, I'll just have you shout out what you're looking for from the panel, something you'd really like us to tackle. Anyone, just shout it out.
Fake responses.
What's that?
Fake responses,
great. Anything else? When to have discussions online versus offline. Yeah.
How to scale.
How to scale. Great. Yeah. The new private messaging feature that came with Timeline for brands. Yeah, great. The timing of the response. As in, like, how long should it take to respond? Great. Yeah.
What the social media teams look like at different brands.
Great. Very good. What do the social media teams look like at different brands? Right here. Excellent. I know Eric's going to cover that. Yeah. Irate customers. Very good. Okay, right. Great. Right here. Say that again, please. Oh, sharing of personal information on the wall. Like when customers give out their social security number. And they shouldn't. Yeah. Interaction with legal and compliance. Great. Yeah. Okay. If you think about it, you can come up. We're going to allow probably the last 20 minutes or so for questions, so it'll be plenty of time. This is the hashtag SXCustServe. So I encourage you to use that hashtag during the panel. I will be gathering up some of the best tweets from this panel today and adding them into, let me advance my slide here. So if you want to take note of this or tweet it out, some of the stats I'm going to give out, I have in here in these slides, our Twitter handles, the links to our Facebook pages and such are in there as well. And then I will add in some of the tweets and notes from the panel within the next 24 to 36 hours or so. May need an extra long night of sleep tonight. I think you guys can relate to that. So how many minutes can we start, or are we still early? One more minute. Okay. So all of those questions you guys brought up, we should hit on most of them. Those were really great suggestions. And as I said, if we don't, there's plenty of time we'll allow for your questions as we get going. So I have 12:30, so if that's okay, I'm going to get started. Thank you all for coming. Pleased to see so many of you here. Last summer or so, when we had to submit ideas for panels, I was looking on a Facebook page of one of my favorite airlines, and you know, I would see their posts in my newsfeed, right? The posts would come in, and then I actually went to their wall and saw them say, you know, and they're sending out updates once or twice a day with promotions and special offers and fly here and there. But we don't really have time to answer your particular customer service issues here on Facebook. And that for me, I mean, that's bugs the heck out of me, right? Because when you establish a presence in Facebook as a brand, you should expect that customers are going to come and ask questions, customer service issues. And I think I think it's irresponsible, and I understand there are some legal restrictions in some cases, but otherwise I think it's irresponsible to really have a presence as a brand and to ignore your customers in a place like Facebook. So that was the impetus behind putting this panel together, and have a great group here, and Molly and Eric and Mark will introduce themselves in just a minute. But a couple of stats to kind of frame this discussion here. Some research came out in the Customer Service Impact Report, 2011 Customer Experience Impact Report. 79% of consumers who shared complaints online about a poor customer service experience last year had their complaints ignored. No response. Shocking, I think. And then this one, this was just in eMarketer March 1st. 56% of brands, of leading brands, top 50 brands, did not respond to a single comment from a customer on their Facebook page. I mean, absolutely, I think, staggering. And so I'm going to ask these guys what they think about that in a couple of minutes. But to continue here, each of the panelists is going to give sort of their overview on this topic, and then we will get into some more questions. So, Molly, you want to introduce yourself and tell us about your role?
Hi, I'm Molly DeMagd, and I'm the director over our social media customer service team for AT&T. And our team was put together around August of 2009. We started out with a team of just four social media managers. We're up to a total of 33 social media managers now, and I have a team of 50 total overall between our social media managers, my community team, strategy team, as well as support for analytics and everything else, our monitoring tool. We monitor and respond, you know, not just to Facebook, but Twitter, all social media, all mentions of AT&T and AT&T products. When my team was put together, it was at the request of our CEO, and we are not just responding to our customers and helping the customers and resolving those issues. It's very important for us to identify why they came to social media in the first place with their problem and identify those root causes and drive changes back into the business. So it's not just putting a Band-Aid on it and helping them through social media, but trying to figure out what happened and making the changes overall company-wide.
Great. Eric?
Hello. I'm Eric Ludwig from Rosetta Stone. I manage the North American business for Rosetta Stone, so I'm not only responsible for all of the digital programs that we have, including our social program, but I'm responsible for television, media, radio. I'm sure you guys have passed in the airports, and I would encourage you on your way out of town to pick up a yellow box. But we actually realized that the company, just being in yellow boxes, was very cold, it was very dead, it was very something that just simply wasn't a living brand. And so we made a conscious decision to take our social program from something that was very small, less than 10,000 global fans and followers, to in the last 15 months, we now have about 1.2 to 1.3 million global fans and followers. And we think it's more about the counts. It's actually about transforming the company. There are some concepts that we'll talk about a little bit later today. One of them is social by design. So at the core of everyone's business is people. And so we do believe that every aspect of the company needs to be centered on the social programs. So what we do actually is consider the life cycle of our customers. So from the time that someone's a prospect, all the way up through considered purchase to the point where they make a purchase, they come back for any types of issues that they have. Hopefully they become loyal fans, and hopefully they become raving loyal fans on our Facebook page, and we try to manage that process with some structure and process and intelligence. And we have a team of about 30 to 40 people across the company that manages this program for us. But we'll talk about some of the issues that we've encountered as we built that program and some of the ways in which we've tried to optimize the program as we continue here.
Mark?
And I'm Mark Williams, and I'm with LiveWorld. We're a moderation services and a community programming services company for a lot of Fortune 100, Fortune 500 brands. I've personally been in this space since 1999. And we work for, one of the world's largest retailers with 4,000 stores. We work for one of the world's largest CPG companies. And the perspective that we have is across market segments. We're currently working CPG. We're working automotive, financial services, pharma, the retail, entertainment, automotive. So we got a really broad perspective of what different people are doing out in the space, and our moderation team is usually the front lines of seeing content as it comes in. And what we're advising our clients as across the landscape is that content is queen. Right? We're used to saying content is king. Content is queen, and what king is customer service. And the analogy flows from the chess, from playing chess, in that the queen is the most powerful piece on the chessboard, capable of moving in any direction and capturing any piece, but the object of the game is to get the king. And when you lose your king, you've lost the game. And as Eric points out here, that most of us in our purchase cycles, we're checking in to see how we are going to be treated before we get to the buying cycle later on, and that influences whether we're even going to buy or not. So hopefully, you know, we're going to address some of the questions that you have here and bring some of our workflows and processes to help you out here.
Great. And I didn't introduce myself properly at the beginning. I'm Brian Person, Director of Social Insights at a company called Social Dynamics. We are a software startup focusing on scaling social customer care for large brands. And I actually worked with Mark for about 3 years at LiveWorld and joined Social Dynamics a few months back. So I think we have a broad perspective here on the panel in tackling some of these topics. So I mentioned earlier that stat, 56% of leading brands did not respond to a single Facebook message from a customer or wall post from a customer in 2011. How is that even possible? How does that happen? Anyone? Mark, you want to take a stab first?
Bluntly, there's a lot of folks that don't get it. you know, they're using Facebook as a marketing, as a broadcast channel. And there still are people out there, apparently, who don't get that it's about a relationship with your customer. And relationships take, like real world, take time and communication and a little bit of effort. And it's probably easier. It's easier just to put your message out there than it is to actually engage with people.
So we were at the Facebook marketing conference a few weeks back, and the way that Facebook is trying to change the platform, they actually talk about shares, likes, and comments being a means to an end. The end for them is actually talking, right? So no one goes to a party, and this was the example that Paul Adams gave, who runs global engagement for Facebook. He said, no one goes to a party and is asked, hey, what'd you do last night? Well, I was online sharing, or I was online commenting. That's not what we say. We tell people about the experiences in our lives. And what they're actually trying to do is to scale one-to-one communication. So if a brand, and that stat is true, then we as brand managers don't realize that this platform gives us a revolutionary way to return to one-to-one communication. 150 years ago, if you lived in a small town and you went to your local retail merchant, he would know pretty much everything about you and your family. He would know what you eat, what you consume, the kinds of clothes you wear, and he would begin to anticipate what your needs are. So you would come in the fall, and he would remember something that you purchased from the prior year, and he would begin to stock his shelves and interact with you based on all of those interactions. Now, decades of years back, when retail began to scale, it was impossible. It was impossible to have those one-to-one, true, deep connections with people. So we had to rely upon advertising to do that. And the fact is that this platform now gives us this opportunity. If you have good processes in place, if you have good infrastructure in place, and you have a team that you teach to interact with customers, customers will feel as if you are, in fact, not ignoring them, that you're addressing them, that there's a much deeper level of connection than there has been for decades. And I think it's going to change advertising overall. And I happen to agree with Facebook that when they consider their ad units stories or conversations, that's exactly what we're going to be doing more and more of. And if they're authentic and good and connected to the customers, brands will win. And if they're not and they're inauthentic or you lie about your benefits, your features, your services, your brand will lose. So be authentic and make sure that you don't ignore those customers. That would be my advice.
Yeah, I think a lot of companies are overwhelmed, and they don't know, you know, how to handle the responses and questions. And of course, you know, it's not going to be all positive happening on your Facebook page. And you know, the way that I look at it is, if the customer is there and they're asking you a question, they're complaining, you know, you need to listen to it. You need to take that information and it's, you know, and use that and make the changes and not just ignore it. And with, you know, building our team out, I know in the beginning, one of the biggest challenges that I had was
being worried about being able to handle the volume. And, you know, once you're out there, of course, you need to be out there and to be able to support the customers. And we, in order to do that, and that was really important for us to in the beginning, because we really didn't know what kind of volume we're going to have and what kind of headcount I was going to need. And I just had to get the support from my leadership to be able to grow my team, you know, when I needed to. And so thankfully I was able to do that, but it was, and I had to grow the team pretty quickly. But I think that's another reason that people, you know, they're just afraid to respond to it, or just, you know, if they just ignore it, they think it's going to go away.
Now, Molly and Eric, you're both getting at the scale question. We had, I think, someone over here that wanted to hear that, and I'm sure many of you do as well. How do you guys think about that? So part of it is staffing. Do you have enough people? But what are the other considerations? Like, if you get 10,000 messages coming into you a day, I'm sure you get that some days, Molly, and you can only answer 200 or 300. Like, how do you attack that scale issue?
First.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So for us, we definitely are drinking from a fire hose on a daily basis. And so we prioritize what's coming in. We get to everything that's coming into us directly first. And as far as scaling and growing the team, it's something that I'm looking at on a daily basis. And we're looking at additional tools in order to improve our efficiencies. And you know, it's something that, you know, as of today, my headcount needs for the rest of the year, you know, may be different than they are, you know, next week. It really just depends on what's happening in our environment, what with the new tools that we're trying and introducing that help add additional efficiencies, that helps as well. But I've definitely have been lucky that I still have been able to grow my team, and it's, you know, we just have to, in addition to, you know, adding additional headcount, we have to continue to look at new tools and make sure we're being efficient.
Mark, what's your take on that? Because I know you work with a lot of large brands that get really high volume comments and questions on a daily basis. How do you talk to customers, and how do you organize around that?
Well, fundamentally, that is our core business, mm-hmm. right? We help people scale, and our tools, we can process more data out of Facebook than you can just coming in off of a front wall. Our tools allow us to get to anywhere from 500 to 800 posts per hour per person. And we'll set teams up, you know, workflow processes where some people will just come in and just read all of the messages and flag them. And those that need to go off to customer service issues then go off to a different set of responses or a different set of people. And the folks that need some type of marketing response go off to a different set of people there. So we're, you know, as I said, this is our core business, is we don't believe every message should be read. Every message should get processed in some sort of way, that there is no priority of, do I make somebody happy, or do I give somebody some information? I mean, everybody who's there needs to be seen, needs to be heard, and that's what they're looking for. That's why they're there.
Would you agree with that, Molly? Because, I mean, I know you probably can't view every message that comes in every day, right? So how do you view certain messages as having priority over others, or when you can't get to them all in a day, like how do you decide?
So
what do you look at?
On Facebook, you know, another important thing that I just realized I didn't add is it's not just my customer service team that's there monitoring and responding. We also partner really closely with our corporate communications team. And so between the two teams supporting and responding to customers, you know, it's us working together. You know, it's not, you know, one team working in a vacuum. We're working together on the page and deciding who's answering, you know, what question. I mean, there are some things that are just rants on our page that we don't respond to. Sometimes we can't respond to it for a legal reason. We also have, on our Facebook wall, we have a group that they call themselves the Wolf Pack, and the Wolf Pack is out there, and they're responding to some of these general questions without us having to get involved. Of course, if it's anything account specific, we're going to have to get involved, but that is something that I know we've been working on with our CorpCom team, and looking and seeing, giving it a little bit longer, and if it's a general question, letting the community answer it instead of our teams actually getting in there and answering it, since there's so many other things that are account specific that we as a brand have to get involved with.
Eric, I'd be interested in Rosetta Stone's, you know, how does service support work with marketing? How do the two teams work together?
Sure. So what we had to do was to create a real set of processes around how we would structure the various responders across the company. So we have a kind of constitution, and it doesn't come without some road bumps. And you know, the reality is that everyone in the company is a part of this Social by Design program. And but what we do have is a very specific customer service and success team that that we determined would be most appropriate as a group to respond to certain types of inquiries. So if there's a technical issue, if there's an issue on motivation or product efficacy or other types of questions of that nature, the customer success team is there literally to try to do everything they can to give people a good product experience, to allow them to be successful. Now, our admin and sales and marketing team is responsible for the e-commerce program overall, and ultimately, we do derive a significant amount of economic value from our social programs, and so our admin team is responsible for content curation and dissemination, and we actually talked early on, and the question was this: do you just want to sell yellow boxes, or do you want to sort of own the publishing space around language and culture? And of course, they said the latter. And so they spend a lot of their time just trying to find things that are interesting and engaging for the community. But we do have a very specific set of policies that describe, you know, what types of posts are going to be responded by what types of people. We have very specific policies around hours of coverage, time of day, and a number of other things, including how to respond to attacks, because your brand will get attacked, how to respond to people that post inappropriate content on the wall. And to Molly's point, you begin to layer in machine assistance. So there's an entire new industry being born of people that are out there that will provide services and products to you to help you scale these activities. So I would say the machine-driven assistance that you'll get from those products is invaluable. Create a constitution that makes sense and draws in all parts of the organization. And finally, rely upon the customers themselves, because we don't quite have a wolf pack, which I love. We're going to try to get one, so we should name it. But we do see a significant number of posts that are being answered by our super fans. So our tools, right now, we're working with some folks to develop a set of tools to allow those super fans to be even more empowered in their responses to the rest of the community.
Now, Rosetta Stone does something interesting and perhaps controversial in the accounts that you have to answer some of these wall posts. So if you guys look at facebook.com/Rosetta Stone, you'll see Tracy at Rosetta Stone Success, Rachel Rosetta Stone Success, that will go in and answer using business accounts. And so I guess the question is, are business accounts legal under Facebook's terms of service? I can see how it can be effective, but I know lots of other brands and that we would talk to and say, oh, if I just had that option to use this business account so I didn't have to answer as the brand or as myself and send a personal message exposing my personal profile. Right. So you guys got around it. What's the secret? And yeah, how's that work?
I think the secret is you ask for forgiveness later, and then you sort of tell your reps over at Facebook what you'd like to do and why. But we also did in New York last week. I heard from their global engagement lead. When many brands put their hands up and said, oh, this scaling, this one-to-one sort of storytelling is awesome, sounds great, but how could I possibly do that? I've got 5 million fans and, you know, the kinds of interaction rates that Molly gets. And he suggested there on the stage that brands do sort of what we're doing. And we have some of our team members in the audience today. The value for us is that it personalizes the experience with those customers. And the challenge is that for some brands, you may have fake accounts set up. You may have other types of issues that you could deal with if you go to that scenario. And I think that's why Facebook is concerned about it. But in the end, I would just do it. And I heard in New York that Facebook themselves said that you should. So I would do it.
Anyone here disagree with that or would offer different advice to how to approach that question?
Yeah, well, I guess I'm not saying that we wouldn't do it. We would just definitely have to, you know, look into it and determine what would be the best way to do that. And, you know, we just have, the way we're set up is we're set up as admins, and everybody who responds, it's all AT&T with the globe, and we sign the post, so it's clear to the customer who it is that is working with them. But so,
and I also think because they're going to change the access privilege levels for admins, you know, probably many of you are concerned about everyone having the ability to delete your page. When we've had our own issues where, you know, there was some page change out, and, you know, you probably all have stories about that in here. But I think that kind of move on Facebook's part is an indication that they're going to be supportive of this methodology.
And we've advised folks that would be a best practice what you're doing, but of course, we can't really come out and advise people to break the Facebook rules. What we have done for the admin portion, though, is get folks to create a brand profile for admin purposes. Because of those of you who work for agencies or really big brands, is you know at some point in time you're going to wind up with anywhere from 30 to 60 admins on your Facebook page, and having that presence that is clearly branded as somebody lets you know who's who within your page. We would love to advise people to go public with exactly what you're doing, but again, it's we can't do that for our folks and say go break the rules, right?
Molly, I think your approach is interesting on the wall, that you have your reps go in there as AT&T, but then they'll add their name and say, here is my personal or my corporate email address. Send me an email here. And so they're able to personalize it a little bit. Can you talk through how that works and how successful that's been?
Yeah. So definitely on Facebook, there's the challenge of not being able to have direct message like you do on Twitter. Now there is the message feature. We can get into that. That's not something that we have turned on yet, and we're trying to determine if we are going to turn it on. But so what the approach that we've taken is, if it is something that we're going to have to take that customer offline for, which a lot of the issues, the customers or questions that they have are account specific, and we're not going to be able just to address that right there on the Facebook wall. We give an email address, the customer sends their contact information, and then we get back with them. And it's it works. It's just, at times, it's you're playing tag with the customer, whether it be over the phone or through email. But it is, at this point, the best way for us to get the customer and get them offline and be able to talk to them and resolve their issue.
Eric or Mark or both of you, thinking about resolving questions in Facebook in public or taking it offline, when is it appropriate to go offline? When should it be resolved in public? And like, what are some of the pros and cons to each approach? Which do you guys advocate?
I would do it in such a way that never makes it seem as if you're trying to stifle the conversation or hide something from the rest of the fans. But if there's a significant issue and someone's in crisis, then yes, we will send a link. And we also have some interaction with various tools that we've used. And so we did Parachur integration very early, where the customers could go in and log their complaint, not only on the wall or in a comment stream, but through our Parachur system. And then we have a dedicated team of folks who would get back to them pretty quickly. For me, it's just about not stifling the conversation and having people trained not as robots, but as real humans, and you say to them, like, when this person is in crisis, make sure you go in right now and try to resolve this. So,
Mark?
I would say when it gets to personal information, obviously that needs to go offline, but there's tremendous power in solving your problems in public, not only for that person, but for the other people on the page who may have a similar problem that you can avoid, or at least give them the answer and not put them into the customer service system, which generates a little bit of expense for yourself. So really, anything you can solve in public, because the rest of the fans also see your integrity, they see your transparency, and they see your brand culture. And that's all part of that purchase cycle, is they want to know, do I want to do business with these people?
Mm-hmm. Now let's talk, Eric, you touched on it earlier, but crisis management and when that happens on Facebook. And you had I don't know if you'd call it a crisis, but an interesting situation with some advertising, political advertising. Could you share that story? Because I think it's instructive both in what happened and how you handled it.
Yeah, sure. So we advertise on a number of networks, and there are a large number of passionate groups on both sides of political spectrums or religious spectrums, whatever spectrum that you're talking about. Some topics are very sensitive. We happened to be advertising on the Glenn Beck show a little over a year ago, and there was a group out there on Twitter called Stop Beck, and they had engaged with several other brands because they took great exception to advertisers that were actually supporting the Glenn Beck show. And suddenly we go from a community of culture and language and civilization to a free-for-all about how horrible we are. And then, of course, there were people who didn't share the opinion of the Stop Beck folks. And so now we've got fans engaged in, like, open warfare on our brand page, right? And they were very good about what they were doing, and too clearly they had well organized themselves, but it hijacked the intent and nature of our page, not just from a content perspective, but from an economic perspective. So we took the strategy, one, not to ban them and not to delete them, not to take it off. We tried to put one post out to say, look, the essence of our company is to bring people together, and we realize that there's a significant number of different opinions on issues, but we're simply not going to we're not going to ban it, and we would appreciate it if you would, you know, if you would take this conversation elsewhere. And so what we did try to do is suddenly our daily page posts went from maybe 1 to 2 to like 19 or 20. So we just kept trying to push content, just regular scheduled content. We just increase the frequency, push it down. And we'll get into a reason why that isn't going to be possible with timeline in a moment. But that was strategy one. What was interesting, we didn't have the wolf pack, but at some point, the folks that just liked being on the page to talk about the issues that we do talk about, the fans themselves finally said, you know what, guys, enough. I just want my Rosetta Stone page back, enough. And so my advice would be, you know, don't take it off the page, don't delete it. You only add energy to the fire when you do those kinds of things. We only delete things that are incredibly offensive or illegal or those kinds of things, but if it's just an expression of opinion, we leave it up.
Mark, you've dealt with a crisis or two in your time at Live World. Is there a story that comes to mind that you can share?
Yes. we've dealt with a lot of crises. And so the first thing I would say is it takes a little bit of wisdom to know what is an actual crisis and what is just really a kerfuffle. So if I can get two quick stories out of this, one, a non-crisis that was turned into a crisis by social media pundits. The backstory of a brand that's deleted a few posts, when in reality what was going on is there was a lot of spamming on the page by about 5 to 10 people who were just making the same post over and over and over and over and over. And they were unhappy people, and they had a right to be unhappy. Once their post started to get deleted, there was some messaging that went out that was not really strong messaging, and that was a breakdown in communication process between, you know, the messaging people and the people delivering the message. And what wound up happening was it got picked up in social media, like this big, awful, terrible thing was going on, and ooh, they're deleting posts over here. And the reality of it is that the actual fans of the page were not upset at all. And as Eric says, the brand evangelists start to come out and say, we don't know why everybody's complaining about this. We're just fine with it. And I use the term slacktivism, right? A bunch of people who just get their ire up and they come over to a page and they spit some venom, and they're not actual fans. They're not actual customers. They just want to toss their opinion out there. And the net result of this guy's got slammed in social media. And the reality is like a month later, engagement on the page is higher than ever by their fans, and everybody's like really, really happy. So understanding the difference between a real crisis from your actual customers and when people are coming in from the outside to sort of agitate. And the other very quick thing is during the World Cup, we were working with Castrol just after the BP spill. Right. Well, you can imagine the sentiment that was going on around Castrol as a subsidiary of BP. And Castrol had spent a lot of money to sponsor the World Cup. They were one of the major sponsors. And we were there with them. And what we saw, we actually didn't have to do anything. Anytime somebody came onto the page and wanted to talk about how evil BP was for their oil spill policies, the fans themselves just like would not have anything to do with it. They would, in fact, increase content and just keep the topic on auto racing. We're doing a racing page and a soccer page, football for those of you, from across the pond. And just allow the fans to understand that they know what the purpose of the page is, and allow them their forum. And if the majority of the people don't want to go there, then they will take it where they want to go. And if the majority of people do want to go there, then it's up to the brand to sort of listen, go there for a while, and just like we do at a party, change the topic at some point in time, right? People have had to say, they've had their participation, and it's time to move on.
So let's talk about the changes with Timeline. So Timeline is being introduced for brand pages. I know AT&T has already adopted some of them. They've put the Timeline up there. And I think Rosetta Stone, you guys will be in the next – everyone has to adopt it by March 30th, as you probably know. So I'd be interested in each of your takes on sort of what are the key changes that are coming here. How are you guys internally discussing it, and Mark, for your, you know, for your clients? And that can include the private messaging option. It is an option that brands can turn on. So Molly, you want to start?
Sure. So we our change was made to our page when the Timeline was launched, and it definitely, I think one of the first things we were seeing from our fans and customers is they're confused. They think we're deleting posts when, you know, we're not. They're there. It's just, it's harder for them to get to them and see them. I'm sure if you haven't gone and looked at one of the new Timelines on a brand wall, you have kind of down to the right is where the customer comments are. You know, the brand posts are to the left, so those are separate. So with Eric's point about putting, you know, additional posts on there, it's not going to affect your customer posts that are there. Those are still going to be, you know, flowing in there. We have not turned on the message feature. It was accidentally turned on for a short time, and the sentiment and the questions kind of and comments coming through the message feature during that time were a lot harsher, and, you know, the customers, I guess, were feeling a lot more comfortable with just being open with everything, that even more than when they're posting on our wall. So I guess since they feel like they were anonymous, they could, you know, be even more threatening at times than they are on our wall. So we are discussing the messaging feature right now. The messaging feature, if we turn that on, it would not be pulled into our monitoring tool. So we're definitely not going to turn it on until it's something that can be pulled into our monitoring tool. Even when it is pulled into our monitoring tool, we need to determine if that is going to be the best way for us to help our customers. It would be something from for staffing, for my team, for our corporate communications team, we'd have to look at to see how we would manage it appropriately. So far, I mean, I think the biggest impact has been from the customers thinking that we're deleting posts and just kind of being confused about the page. So.
Eric?
So I think Timeline is really interesting. It's going to give us an opportunity to change the nature of our approach to content. That's one way in which we're thinking about Timeline. From the standpoint of the messaging feature, it's an interesting sort of human dynamics play. What we should remember, especially as you begin to scale, or if you're already a brand that has great scale, is that in any population, it's a normal distribution. It's a bell curve. And people that interact with you on your wall tend to be much more central in that curve. They're in that first standard deviation, 68% or so. You're going to have those tails. You're going to have those tails, you know, that 2.5% in each tail. On one side of the tail, it's like a Monty Python movie where, you know, you punch a guy in the nose and his nose starts to bleed and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, my nose got in the way of your fist. I apologize. So no matter what you do, they love you. On the other side, no matter what you do, for some people, they just hate you. And I actually think I wouldn't get too spun up over the kinds of responses that you're getting with this private message feature, because I tend to think that that is going to really begin to tap into that tail of those people that even if you gave them $1 million, they would be like, wonderful, but I wanted to. And so I would just encourage you to make sure you try to investigate the nature of the people that are responding through various channels on your page so that you're not misapplying energy. And that's sort of how we're thinking about the messaging feature. But we haven't completed our strategy, and that's why we haven't switched yet to Timeline as a brand.
Mm-hmm. Mark?
Well, Timeline I love as a storytelling device. And if you're an open and a transparent brand, it's beautiful because it lets you know what people are thinking about you in a moment of time, and you know, you can react and respond to that. The messaging feature, I hate this answer in social media, but it really does. It depends on whether you should use it or not, in my opinion. If you're in a really, really big brand with a lot of messaging, I would say don't use it, primarily the workflow process problems. It's a totally manual tool in order to get any data out of it. There's no analytics. There's no reporting on it. It doesn't hook into any CRM system that you're already using. So it simply creates additional work that most brands don't have the resources to follow through with. Now, on the other hand, if you're a smaller brand, Yeah, you definitely want that ability to work one-on-one with your folks. I suspect that what we're going to see is very similar to what Molly said, is it's going to be a spam channel. There's less accountability, or at least there's a feeling of less accountability for it, so people will come in and be more hating on you. It's just an uglier channel, I think, because they do feel it's private, and I can say whatever I want to you. So right now, if you need that one-on-one and people are reaching out to you for it, definitely go for it. But again, for bigger brands, I think it's just extra work without a lot of benefit.
There's also something else that's very important about timeline. It's actually going to hurt, to some extent, smaller brands. It's going to help Facebook in some ways, and I don't mind this, but one of the big issues is you're going to lose your fan block, right? So in your organic fan growth, and all of us want to pull as many people and as much energy into this system as possible, but you're going to have to get around this loss of what's been a really easy, effective tool for you to generate new fans, and probably a very cost-effective tool. Again, I love Facebook, so this isn't negative, but it's my observation on what we do. There are two things that they've indicated to us. One is that you're not going to be able to participate in premium advertising for Timeline unless you have a fan count of 500,000 fans. And if you're posting, you're not going to be able to post more than 9 times, and you're not going to be able to post fewer than 4 times a week. So I'm sure a lot of you brands are out here who, several of you probably post very little, and several of you post probably very much. So this is going to have to change your strategy overall in terms of how you use your page for disseminating information. For us, we're going to get more involved in sort of the comment streams and be very pithy in our reactions to the comment streams. But my observation is this, is that, for smaller brands, it's potentially going to hurt you guys as you try to increase your fan counts. But I understand completely why Facebook is doing it.
One last question here, and you guys can start lining up at the mic if you would like. I'm going to ask one more question of the panel, and then we'll open it up. Frank Eliason, who a lot of you know, started Comcast Cares, and were it not for that, we might not all be up here today talking about social customer service so soon. He actually wrote back in October that social media customer service is a failure, and that we're using outdated metrics and not building the back end to start fixing the problems that actually created the negative experience in the first place. So do you agree or disagree with Frank's take there? Molly?
So I agree. It's something that if you're just putting your social media customer service team out there just to answer the questions and not have that product feedback loop or the feedback loop in place to look at that root cause and get the fixes in place, then it is. But it is something that, like I said before, at AT&T, it has been a priority since the beginning. And I'm not saying it's easy by all means. I mean, it's a lot that is happening and a lot of feedback and a lot of changes that are needed. And some are bigger than others. Some are just small changes to existing policies and wording them differently for making it easier for agents to understand them. Sometimes it's new policies that need to be created, or sometimes it's getting the fight together and to get some changes made to existing policies. So it is something that I think it's important for any brand, if you're out there, in social media and doing customer services, to listen to the customers and get that feedback back into the rest of the company. And it is something that, my team does, our corporate communications team does, and at any point when there is anything that we need to make sure our executives are aware of, it's something that, I'm putting reports together on a daily basis for them so they know exactly what is being said in social media during these times when there, is something that's happening that they're really interested in. And they look closely at what our customers are saying, and we've had changes made, as a result, of course, not just from feedback through social media, but other channels too. But it's important that you take that feedback and get it to the right places.
Eric?
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with what he said there, only because I think it's in its infancy. I think we have the chance to change everything, and I think innovative people are going to create entirely new paradigms for, and we're seeing some of that, and I think we've touched on some of that now, like empowering your customers to weigh in. Think about that. Brands would never do that.
You know, like, and the fact is this, like, to describe or to listen to the description of some of these various things, like, brands typically can't go on a counteroffensive if they've been under attack. But it's not as if we reward the Wolfpack or reward these other folks necessarily. But just think about that dynamic, is that we now have this counteroffensive movement among our passionate, loyal customers. And I think it's one example of the way in which customer service overall is going to just change, and it's going to change in incredible ways in the coming decade.
Mark?
Sometimes I think we overthink these things, right? So the point of getting information is to do something with it. The point of listening to somebody in a relationship is to improve your relationship with it. So please don't tweet this, but the fact is Comcast service does suck. Okay? Right? So if you have thousands and tens of thousands of people out there saying that your service sucks, it doesn't matter that the people who are responding to that are really, really nice. I don't know anybody in this room that would go buy a car that they know is going to break down frequently, but get it anyway because the guy at the service department is pretty cool, right? So yeah, listen to the information that you're getting and actually go and do something about it.
Great. Questions? Anyone want to come up to the? I think they have to come up to the mic, and we'll power through them here. And feel free to introduce yourself before you ask the question. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much. This has been incredible. My question is directed at Molly, but I'd love to hear everybody's answer. When you are going through the process of hiring and training your agents for your Facebook team, two questions. One is, what is the difference in sort of how you identify the right talent for that role? And how do they view their role and sort of the level of engagement that they're playing in that customer journey?
Okay. So, and our social media, they're all managers. They're not at the agent level. They're actually managed at the manager level. When as far as interviewing, we're looking for several years of customer service experience within AT&T, as well as management experience, making sure that when they're out there and helping our customers, they're able to make the right decisions and handle everything correctly. We do look at their writing skills as well, since they are communicating and writing. But we really look for that passion for taking care of the customer service and wanting to make a change and a difference with the company. And I think if you talk to any of our social media managers, it's a nice, refreshing change for them, getting into a different environment where we're constantly telling them and encouraging them, you know, if you have an idea, if you have a suggestion, you know, let us know, and we will work on, you know, whether it be internally within our team or getting that feedback through to the right channels. And I think, and it's something I think culturally needs, you know, I would like to see it happen, you know, within our call centers too, but making sure that they feel like they're empowered and that they, if they have ideas and suggestions that they could, if they do give those, that it will be, that we'll listen to them, you know, management will listen to them and not necessarily implement everything, but listen to it and get those changes in. So I think that's where, you know, they definitely feel much more empowered, and it's exciting. There's a lot of, you know, whenever we have openings on our team, there's hundreds and hundreds of people that apply for, you know, just sometimes just for one position. So it's...
Yeah, I think it's art and science. I think many of you probably have large call center operations. So look into the data. Like, people get feedback. They get satisfaction feedback by customers. So find the best folks who consistently get fantastic ratings from your customers, and then do an intersection against whether or not they have the writing skills, and then certainly qualify them as passionate people. But I think you're covering off on that by the fact that they're pleasing these customers anyway. And so that's really what I would do. Use the data and then, you know, give them some writing exercises, which is what we do, and then cut them loose.
Great.
And small thing to add to that is create your customer service strategy and empower the people who are inside of it to understand everybody's role within it, right? So that we don't just have call center people who just respond to some things, but they know where it goes and they know what the likely reaction is to be, and they're part of your brand culture.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Hi.
My name is Nick. I'm the customer care manager for QuickOffice. This question is directed to Molly, but anyone else, feel free to chime in. So I am an AT&T customer, and I love your social media team. However, I think that the call support, the phone support is garbage. So that being said, how do you close the gap, that disparity? Do you turn callers into fans? If so, what kind of strategy do you use to make that happen?
Well, it's something that is it's a focus on for the entire company, not just for me. It's something that is a priority for us for this year, and at this point, it's really getting it's the feedback, getting it back to the right channels, and getting those changes. We're already looking at the priorities and the things that have to change in order to make those improvements and for the customers to have that better customer experience when they're calling into the call centers. And, you know, they're looking at their hiring processes and their training processes. And so it's a work in progress. It's something that I've been, you know, working on and trying to get some movement on since my team was put together. But since the beginning of this year, we're definitely seeing a lot of movement. We have somebody who is was promoted to he's the Senior Vice President of Customer Experience for AT&T. So customer experience, customer satisfaction is definitely a big priority, and I think you're going to see some changes happening throughout the entire company soon.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. We knew we'd have some hard questions, Molly. Bring them on. They're prepared. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Radhika Giri from SiriusXM Radio. Thank you for your comments. What are some of the metrics you're using to measure the performance and effectiveness of support through social?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
So with my team, we add more metrics as our tools give us the ability to, but we look, of course, at the overall volume. We look at our initial response time. We look at the end-to-end time it takes to resolve the issue, keeping in mind that it's not, you know, sometimes we have to get other teams involved. We do own that issue from end-to-end, though, and there's a lot of issues that my team can just resolve themselves without having to get anybody else involved. The end-to-end time, though, is not, at this point, is not something that is held against the social media managers unless for some reason they didn't follow up. But you have to keep in mind that, you know, we reach out to the customer and sometimes they don't get back to us within 2 days. Sometimes they never get back to us. So, we have 60% of our customers, they do get back with us with their information and we can help them. And the other 40% just never respond back. So it could be that they already got help or but then the other really big measurement is customer satisfaction. So we do measure the social media managers on customer satisfaction. And I'm trying to think of some of our other big metrics. I mean, the other ones are just, you know, standard ones that are coming around volume. But the customer satisfaction, willingness to recommend. And then we also do measure if the customer does come back to us and thanks us, you know, not just through the survey, but we do have customers who come back and onto the Facebook wall or tweet or write blogs about their experience after we've helped them. And so that's also a metric that we track, is that the kudos, that positive feedback after their interaction with us.
Molly, do you send out a survey question to them after you've had an exchange? Is that how you
get that? Yeah, so customers that we actually assist, and you know, they've gone back with us, that we assist once that that ticket is closed. Right now, it's only going out through Twitter DM, and we're working on an enhancement in our tool to get it out through email too.
Yeah, so I would say very, very similar sets of metrics, but what we also try to do is customer status or customer type. And so is it a prospect? Is it what we call learner, an existing customer? Is it a super fan? And we have some qualitative statistics that we're very interested in as well. What is the nature of this interaction with us? And from understanding the nature of the interactions, I think it's one of the most useful ways in which we can modify the product, modify the way in which we deal with those customers overall. And so we probably spend more time. We certainly look at all of the other statistics that are available through the tool and the tool sets that we use, but we ask ourselves a lot about what's the nature of these interactions with these customers and what can we do with that information.
And I would add, I have some really strong feelings on metrics here. I would add, probably more importantly, is sentiment. Right, because if we're looking at the number of volume of calls and the object is to get as many calls as we possibly can, well, now we're into a Comcast thing where your product sucks if that many people are complaining about you. So the object is not how many of these can we possibly answer. if we're going to time to resolution or time to first response, well, there are some questions that are better left for your community to answer. So you may come across a post in 5 minutes, but it's actually better if you wait an hour for some of your fans to answer that question itself. All right, so the metrics, I understand the need for them. I truly do. But at the end of the day, it's how are people feeling about your page and how are people feeling about you? So the more problems that you resolve, you want fewer problems to come to the page, right? And you want people feeling better about being there.
Thank you.
Great. Hi.
Hi, Ross Vernetten. So if Facebook is the one place where a brand can actually act like a person and develop a relationship with people on a one-to-one basis, is personalizing posts kind of foregoing that opportunity where people start to relate to that person posting and not the brand? And can you convince me otherwise?
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by by personalizing posts? Can you say more on that?
If you identify the admin who's posting.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
What's one of your favorite stores or brands?
REI?
Do you like the people that you talk to at REI?
Yeah.
There you go, right? You like the brand because you like the people.
And I'm sorry, I meant AT&T.
Oh.
Do you like AT&T?
I do, actually.
Do you like the people at AT&T?
What's the relationship?
For AT&T, I mean, we want to make it a more personalized experience. I mean, I think, you know, we don't want them to think that they're just talking to the big globe. You know, there's people behind that. And it's that, you know, we do care. And it's not just this big mammoth company that's there and, you know, a robotic answer to your question. It's something that we've tried to make, you know, personal on our Facebook page, through Twitter, and with my social media managers taking that ownership of that customer's issue and letting them know that, you know, we value as a customer and we want to be able to answer your question and fix your issue. And that's really, for us, because we're such a big brand, I think it's important for the customers to know that there are real people.
And I think also, so, you know, you have brand attributes. You have tone, you have voice. The folks that, even though it's personified in, you know, the icon and picture of them and the way in which they interact with customers, it still carries the brand's voice and tonality in a lot of ways. Now, you can push the envelope with that a little bit, and I think you should. I think you should be very conversational. I think you should be very pithy and lightweight in your interactions. But, you know, some of the folks that have done this incredibly well, the Chicago Tribune and Brent Paynes, several of you probably understand what he did at the Chicago Tribune. I have a friend who works for the Cosmopolitan Hotel in New York, and Allison does a terrific job capturing the essence of Aria and Sitter Center and this megalithic sort of, you know, casino that exists out there. But people resonate with her as well because she resonates with the brand. And so I think there is definitely some balance to it, but train your people and make sure that they understand the brand guidelines incredibly well, and then you'll be okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's the training that we have to do is on the social media side, and, you know, what are the guidelines? Because I don't want to train them as being a customer service, you know, specialist manager. That's what they already do. But training them on how to interact with those customers on our page as a real person, but of course staying within our guidelines too.
But I also say, so one of the quotes that they left at FMC too was they get higher engagement when you talk with less characters. So the average brand, I think the character in a post is 16, but when someone talks to you, the average number of characters in their interaction is 11. So we talk a little bit more than we would need to. And also they found that the engagement levels are so much higher when you're not talking about facts, you're talking about feelings. So they actually say feelings, not facts. And so I would suggest that when you personify that brand experience, you're tapping into that feelings, not facts.
Thanks.
Great question.
Hello.
Hi. I manage social media at Neiman Marcus. And right now we have the volume of customer service issues is manageable on a human scale as long as we have one person on duty at all times monitoring and responding. So I have a two-part question. Is there a tipping point when you know you need to start layering in some paid solutions and machine-driven assistance, as you said, and when that time comes, where do you start?
You want to go first?
Well, I'll start with following up with what you just said, right? Is how does it feel? right? So if it starts to feel like it's becoming overwhelming and you're not getting to the things that you want, then it's time to do something different. Again, it depends on the volume, whether that's extra people or whether it turns into a tool that can get things done more efficiently, right? We promote what we call a tech-powered human touch, right? So the tool can get to 500 or 800 posts per hour, but there still has to be a human that's making a judgment on all of that and what to do with it, right? So the tipping point, you know, it's difficult, right? It's got to be resources. How much money do you have for the budget for it? What's it worth? This is where the metrics, of course, come in handy, because you need to sort of justify the money that you're either spending or losing or making with your customer service efforts.
Yeah, my comment, too, is that if anyone in this room believes that this is sort of like an opportunity with a curve that goes kind of like this, slightly linear, then, you know, I think you're wrong. I think what we're going to see is it's going to change so much that the curve is going to be more compound or even exponential. So I would say for a brand such as yourself, make the investment and the payoff will be there. We can talk at another time about where you'll see the payoff in that investment. But, you know, if you're a decent-sized brand, you have to invest.
Yeah, I mean, we're constantly looking at, you know, what our volume increases are month over month, you know, week over week, year over year. We have spikes and, you know, then things, whether it be seasonal or when we have iPhone launches, whatever it is, that definitely increases our volume. But it's something that I'm looking at and forecasting out and trying to plan for and hire for, you know, well in advance, and as well as in the meantime, really tweak our tools and get, you know, new tools in order to improve the efficiencies. But it's definitely, it's important. And I know it's hard, especially in the beginning. And I mean, it's something that we still are, it's not anything that we have 100% nailed down, but you have to look at, you know, what kind of increases you're having, and it's better to be, you know, ready and staffed and then to be caught and have this huge volume of things coming in and you guys can't handle it.
I mean, there's so many vendors coming at me all the time. I just, like, who's who and where do you begin? Where do you begin cutting through all that?
Well, afterwards, I would come and talk to Mark.
Or us. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
If you want some more, you get two more.
And I think all of us probably know of some folks that we could suggest to you. Come up afterwards and we'll share.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks so much. We probably have time for one more question. Yeah, go ahead. How can you empower your fans to do your customer service for you?
Yeah.
The Wolfpack.
Sorry, part two.
Oh, you're from Lithium. Right. We use Lithium for our forums. So as far as empowering the customers to you know, do the customer service for you, it's within our Facebook page. I mean, it's something that has just happened naturally. It was this group, you know, that they call themselves the Wolfpack now, they just started, you know, they were on the page very frequently, they're answering questions, and they're, you know, it's nice at times too, because not just the Wolfpack, but other customers, you know, they can respond to questions and say things to your customers that there's not any way that you could say that as a brand, you know, customers who just come and post the same question or comment over and over, and you've offered to help them, and no, you know, they're not coming back and giving any information for help, but the, you know, you have them come on the page, the Wolfpack or our advocates, and just say, you know, they've offered help to you already. If you want help, they'll help you. If you don't want help, then stop posting on, you know, on the page. So that's nice. I mean, is what we've been working on with our Wolfpack is Chris Bacchus, who is head of social media strategy for AT&T, has been working on a few different things where he's getting them involved with doing reviews on devices, video blog reviews, and those are posted on the page. They went to a couple of them. Chris invited them to CES and the developers conference, and so getting them more involved in a few different things and making them feel more like they're part of the community. So those things are working, you know, on our Facebook wall, and then, you know, when you have your own separate community too, some of those things will work, but there's, you know, that's a whole other discussion and something that we're working on right now within our forums.
So I would add, you know, do both fixed interval and random interval reward and interaction with those super fans. And so throw parties for them occasionally. And we did. We took a group of super fans to New York City. We're coming up on 1 million U.S. fans, and we're going to have another big event But what we do that's sort of like a random interval thing is even in the comment strings sometimes where our responders are addressing a particular issue, we'll do an autofill with one of our superfans' names and say something like, Matt, weren't you just talking about this like last week? Which, of course, pushes a message to him at some point and brings him back in. And just what it really does, it's not that we're asking him to respond on our behalf. What we're saying is that we acknowledge you as someone who contributes to this page, and we appreciate it. And so I would do things like that.
Final, I don't know, 30 seconds or so, final piece of advice to everyone out here for the, you know, key point to having success in social customer service. Mark?
So riffing off the content is queen and customers are king, I would say put the same level of effort and sophistication into your customer service strategy as we are all putting into our content strategies. Right, over the last 2 years in the social media industry, everybody's been talking content, 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 and we have incredibly great content strategies out there and content calendars and things like that. And I'm seeing a lot of tactics in customer service, but no real strategy. So put the same effort into strategy for your customer service as you do for your content.
Eric, final words.
Yeah. I would just say be authentic, be real with them, encourage real, authentic communication for everyone that's in that ecosystem, and you know, good things wind up happening. In our observation, good things happen when you're authentic and real.
Mm-hmm. Molly. All
right. Well, I agree with both of you, especially the authentic piece. I would just say, especially if you're just getting a team ready, is just to be prepared, have enough support there in the beginning in order for you to handle the volume. And I mean, if you start responding to those customers' questions on the page, they're going to see that and they're going to expect that response going forward. So you just want to make sure that you're not unprepared and that you're ready once you're out there and responding to the customers.
And my take would be is give really good training to your customer care team and empower them to be advocates for the brand and give them good tools to help them succeed. So thanks a lot, guys. We'll be up here for a few minutes. Thank you.